I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to Managing Cyber Risk, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by East Centire, the authority in managed detection and response. Joining me today is Mark Sangster, VP Industry Security Strategy at East Centire. Mark, welcome back. Great to be speaking with you today.
It's always a pleasure.
Want to start off by giving us an intro for the episode, as always. I love it. The people love it.
Yeah, of course. Today we're going to talk about making a deal with the devil, right? And is it better than no deal at all? Or as I jokingly call it, Plan B, where Plan B is actually the Bitcoin symbol, right? And you know, I think unfortunately far too many companies find themselves in the crosshairs of these large ransomware gangs, right? Like Conti, we've seen being very active. DarkSide and Sodninsky, of course, we've had discussion about Arrival being taken down. But nonetheless, we still find companies suffering these kind of attacks, and often they're just not prepared for what the consequences look like and fall too quickly, fall back to that plan B, which is, well, we're just going to pay the ransom. And that's not always the right answer. It's a complex answer. And, often it doesn't quite get you back to business as usual. But that's what we're here to discuss.
Excellent. So thinking of a good place to start for the conversation, maybe level set, Mark, why is ransomware so prevalent and damaging?
So, we've seen this over the last year or so, right? The sort of the growth of these ransomware gangs, and I've named a few, and the industrialization of what they do, right? So the surrounding themselves with an ecosystem of experts and technologies that help them infiltrate and exploit the various businesses. And because of that, it's a growth market, right? It's, the reality is if you're not big enough to create your own ransomware malware, well, then you can buy, lease, or revenue share from some of these larger gangs. And some recent, stories aside about, retaliations against Arrival, for the most part, they still operate with impunity. And, even in those stories, right, there's an arrest warrant out for a particular individual. It's highly unlikely that that individual is going to show up in D.C. or New York to be arrested. And so they still operate with impunity. And that's because they're working in countries that aren't necessarily at war with us, but we're adversaries, right, on the geopolitical stage. And I think the other piece of this is it's not just the bad guys, right? It's the companies aren't prepared, right? They labor under these misconceptions, the idea that, they're not a target, right? They're too small or in the wrong place in a small town, or they don't have anything worth stealing. And that's simply not true. The reality is you have a business that can be shut down that you're willing to pay to recover. So there is something, even if it's not data, is worth stealing. And so, they're, as I said, they're generally not prepared because they don't see themselves at risk. And unfortunately, when the ransom man comes a calling, it's a pretty rough, 4 weeks they have to deal with.
I want to kind of punch in on that further. You mentioned a couple of reasons why companies may pay a ransom, but to expand, why is that? Why do they pay the ransoms?
In most cases, it's because they don't have an alternative. So, their recovery strategy, so the backup systems they have, for example, didn't work. They hadn't tested them, or they realized that they too had been infected. And I mean, that's one of the major plays in the bad guy playbook, right? Is to disable or damage those systems, to take those away from you, because they understand what you're going to do, right? First thing you're going to do is fall back to backups. If the backups don't work, now you're going to see what you could rebuild manually. And if that's not going to work, or it's too take too long and it's too costly, ultimately they're trying to walk you down a path to the point where you feel like you have no choice but to pay a ransom. And and a lot of companies even then will say, well, look, we have insurance, no harm, no foul in that sense, right? And that's certainly not it. The other thing I've seen more recently too is I call it the rush to recovery, and it's playing a short game. That's the company saying, we're losing whatever it is, millions a day. We have to get up and running. I don't care what the ransom is. Just pay it. We have enough money, or we have enough insurance coverage, because they feel it's going to accelerate that return to business. And it might not. And so that's why this can't be your go-to. You really have to have a bigger plan and a longer strategy to succeed.
And so if you do pay a ransom, are there, penalties or regulatory fines or anything?
Nothing in this world is free, right?
Yeah,
so
true.
The obvious one that we've all been talking about for the last years has been the Department of Treasury coming out and reminding everyone that if you cannot pay a recipient on the OFAC, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, sanctions list. And these are, known terrorists. And actually, I think there's been some discussion of putting these ransomware groups on those lists. And, that to me is victimizing the victim to some degree. So yeah. Great. Now you're criminalizing what they did. I mean, if you're a hospital in the Midwest and this is the only way to get back to treating patients,
right.
Or you're a manufacturer and this is the only way to get back to business, you know, I don't think you can take that away from someone. So that's one possibility. The other one, of course, is insurance denial of coverage. And while cyber insurance has certainly matured over the last few years, we have seen a significant increase in claims. We're seeing increases in premiums going up. And I think insurers are getting smarter, right? Like, they lack the actuarial data that we have in traditional things like, say, life insurance or auto insurance, but they're getting there, right? They're starting to see, what do these things typically look like? How much does it cost to recover? What are the ransom payments? And more importantly, how well have these companies protected themselves leading up to this instance? So this is a bit of, you know, you left your car unlocked with your, you know, your laptop bag or something sitting on the front seat and it got stolen and now you're crying foul. And while that is a crime, at the same time, you know, what danger did you put yourself in? You know, and I think that leads to the third penalty, which is, of course, future increases, because think of any other form of insurance that you have. You know, if you make a claim, then often miraculously the next year your premium goes up.
Yep.
And I think it's even a little more tricky than that, where one of the things you really have to do is walk that line with the insurer to make sure that if you are going to make a claim against like business disruption or cyber insurance specifically, that A, you have the right policy with the right riders, but B, you follow that to the letter of that contract. So if it says you have to tell us, you know, at this point, like, and I've seen this now too, where companies in that rush to recover pay the ransom, and then the insurer says, hey, like, you didn't engage us in this. We don't know if you negotiated this. We believe we'd have gotten a lower rate. So we're not going to cover it, or we're only going to, you know, give you a partial restitution.
Okay. That makes sense. And I guess, Mark, if paying is a last resort, then how do you demonstrate you did everything you could to avoid paying?
Yeah. And I think that's the real trick here, right? It's like any situation where there's risk involved. You want to show that you understood the risk, that you took whatever actions you could to mitigate it. And of course, there's always residual risk, right? And then that's the kind of stuff you have to accept or prepare for. And it's the same thing here, right? So I kind of call it the magic eight ball. And without visuals, it kind of gets lost. But imagine those little balls, right? Where you shake it and it says, you know, the future doesn't look good or whatever, ask me later. It's the same kind of concept, right? There's eight things that I think you need to do. So one of them is, you know, did we attempt to recover without or with limited business impact? So did we try, right? How did we determine that paying the ransom will accelerate that recovery effort or minimize that business loss? And I'm not talking about creating some, you know, 50-page business case here, but you better show you've thought about it. You know, how do you demonstrate that paying the ransom is your only viable option? And when you do that, can you demonstrate as well, going back to the OFAC, saying, you know, did you make effort to ensure that that group wasn't on some kind of sanctions list, that you yourself were potentially breaking the law? And one of the best ways often to do that is to engage law enforcement, because they can help determine attribution, or the incident response firm you use will help do that. And by the way, on a sidebar, sometimes they have the decryption keys. So if you're hit by a less sophisticated group, often they haven't recycled, or they're recycling keys, and that means you might get away free because there happens to be one. Not always, but sometimes. And then I mentioned, you know, the other one, number six, of course, is your insurance company, right? So, you know, are you following the policy to the letter of the contract here? Are you making sure that you're going to, you know, you're doing the best you can to ensure a successful claim? And then, you know, the rest of it's notifications, like, you know, and that's down to contractual notifications with your clients and your partners, and any authority that you might have to report to. And if you kind of can check those boxes, it, again, like I said, it shows that you understood what your obligations were and you did your best. And in some circumstances, you know, it doesn't always work out, right? But at least you're showing you're aware of them. You're not breaking a rule here or a law because of ignorance. You did it because of, I think, a calculated decision. And that's the kind of thing that gets you out of hot water.
Excellent. And so you mentioned law enforcement engaging them potentially having encryption keys if it's a less sophisticated type of ransomware attack. But will your insurer in any, or your IR firm or breach coach or law enforcement, will they in any case recommend that you pay the ransom?
Yeah. So I get asked that question all the time. And the short answer is no. Now, okay. The long answer is a little more complicated. Okay. Than that. So the reality is, because of the complexity that I've just kind of described here at the 50,000 foot view, no individual is going to indemnify you, right? They're not going to come out and say you should do this or not do this. What they're going to do is lay out information that, again, kind of leads you to that decision path, right? So when I look at the work that we do, our job is to arm our clients with that timely information and work with their legal representatives so they can make a decision. The best thing you can do in this kind of crisis, right, is know what data or information you need at the right time to make an informed decision. And then based on your decision modeling, you then act, right? So a simple example would be we could confirm, say, the presence of a script on an Exchange server, and we know that they have access to send and receive messages, and they're doing that remotely. And we can also confirm, right, that, you know, effectively they could send messages to your clients or your employees, and that they're likely reading everything you're doing because they know they're watching you panic, or they've shut down that system and they've just stolen it all, right? So we can set that context around it. And because we provided that technical details, that helps a client, as an example, now say, okay, so now I know what I can go, what I have to go tell my clients, or I have to go tell, you know, my customers or my employees, right? So they're giving accurate information. And the reason why that's important is, of course, you have to not fall afoul of the Federal Trade Commission and providing misleading or unfair marketing statements. And in fact, the SEC just dinged a few companies several hundred thousand dollars for this, where, you know, they kind of, in their communications to their clients, while they were timely, you know, they downplayed it, right? They did the whole, oh yeah, it wasn't that bad, and we caught it really quickly, and so, you know, don't worry about it. And meanwhile, it's like, it was there for months. You didn't catch it quickly. They had access to this information. It's unclear whether they've actually stolen it, you know, that kind of thing, right? So, you know, I understand every company wanting to minimize the impact of the bad PR,
yeah.
But you have to walk that fine line of still not changing the message or downplaying it. I think there's a bit of a marketing issue there, right? Because you get the marketing people involved, and bless them, but, you know, they want to put a spin on things and they want to make it as advantageous to your brand as they can. And sometimes there's lines you can or cannot cross, and you better know that, right? But at the end of the day, during a material incident where you are going to pay a ransom, where you've contacted law enforcement, where you've made an insurance claim, or you felt that, you know, you need to go to a regulator, like, so if it's, say, it's HIPAA, HSS in healthcare, or the SEC in finance, whatever it is, right? We're going to help you to some degree. We're going to help you try to determine what the attribution is of the threat actor if we can, right? We're going to recommend, I should say this, be very clear on this. We aren't going to do certain things. We will not recommend the cessation of a service. We're not going to draft your comms for you. We're not going to tell you to call an insurer. What we're going to do is lay out the information for you. And that's why it's so important for you to understand what you need to do. So this is all about preparation. If you can go back and say, okay, I need to know, are they on a domain controller? That means they have control of our network. They can bring us down. If the answer is yes, here's what we need to do. We are now going to cut all remote access, as an example. Yes, we know that's going to shut our employees out. And yes, we know that our clients will no longer be able to communicate with us. That's going to create effectively a public announcement. And now we're going to have to deal with that. Those are the kind of things. So we actually do provide a coaching service that walks you through all these simulations or scenarios so that you can work this out. Like I said, right? Information at the right time to make an informed decision to minimize the outcome. And that's exactly what we're here to do.
Awesome. And so I guess my final question for you, but you kind of already touched upon it, was, you know, what will an IR retainer typically cover? So I guess anything further you'd want to share with our listeners on that, Mark?
Yeah, and I'll give you a few points here. And it's just to make sure to the previous point here. Like, when I say we're not going to recommend something, we're not going to do this, the point is you're not going to get some official statement from us that says, you know, we have reviewed the situation and believe you need to do X, Y, or Z, right? It's more it's the inferential stuff, right? We're going to spell it out for you. You know, if A and B, then, you know, do C, right? And that means for us, that's collecting the forensics to identify, you know, compromised accounts, vulnerable, exploited systems, figure out what the initial intrusion was. How did they get in? Where did they move around? Have they left persistence behind? This is one of the biggest things we see, is it's kind of like they steal your data, or they take copies of it, they shut you down, and they leave something like a Cobalt Strike behind, right? A sort of in-memory beacon, so it's not on a drive, that sits there, that's effectively a backdoor. And then they can resell that, right? They can then go, hey, this beacon is sitting on this company's, you know, server, and here's how to access it. That's valuable for somebody else. So we're going to figure out all the details of what happened there and provide as much of that information to our clients. And part of the reason, too, why we're doing this is back to that, I'm demonstrating reasonable care here. I'm demonstrating that we were doing the right thing, that there was good security practice in place. And this is a pretty nefarious attack, right? And we'll supply all that curated information to whoever you need it to go to. And when I say curated, you know, that's got proof of chain of custody in it. So, you know, that means it's authentic. It hasn't been tampered with. We know who's touched it. And, you know, in some cases, will actually provide, you know, will offer that evidence in any kind of legal proceeding, like a discovery, you know, or even at trial, because, you know, you need that last piece of somebody going, well, this is what it means, right? Why did you capture this data and why did you take these files? Well, this is why, because it demonstrates how the bad guys got in, right? So we'll provide any of that kind of information that we can. We'll provide any ongoing incident data that comes up. And again, this is to help you if you're crafting internal or external communications. Provide assessments for that decision making, like I said, and then, you know, collaborate with any group that you bring in. And we generally do that through your legal counsel, right? So your lawyers are going to basically say, well, we have the insurers, we're meeting with them. And, you know, because it is a bit of a team game, right? Like, obviously, when these things happen, if you've called your insurer, they're going to bring in an IR firm like us, where we're doing that. But they'll also, they may bring in a breach coach or another attorney who's involved in this. They may want to include law enforcement, whatever it is, right? So right. We know that we're there to support you and support them through this process.
Well, fantastic. Mark, this has been a great conversation as always. And it was a pleasure speaking with you. So I'm really looking forward to the next time.
Absolutely. Thanks. It's it's a great opportunity. And it's a great venue that you have here to allow us to kind of quickly and succinctly talk about these issues, because most people don't think about them until it's too late. And that's the unfortunate thing, right? You can't go back to planning and preparation, you know, when somebody's pulled the fire alarm and you know, the building's on fire.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great message to close out with. So thank you so much, Mark.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. The Managing Cyber Risk podcast series is brought to you by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. eSentire's mission is to hunt, investigate, and stop cyber threats before they become business-disrupting events. Combining cutting-edge machine learning XDR platform technology, 24/7 threat hunting, and proven security operations leadership, eSentire mitigates business risk and enables security at scale for over 1,000 organizations globally. To learn more about our sponsor, visit eSentire.com.